Troy Galloway is a construction manager and consultant, commercial and residential builder, and a certified inspector for all commercial and residential buildings. And now, here is About the House with Troy Galloway.
Hello, folks. Welcome back. I appreciate you all joining us. We have a great show today. It kind of comes off of the other show we just did with the robotics. I highly recommend you to do the check out the last show that we did with the robot and how the Ghost of the Duck work. It is fabulous. Well, the same company's here, but they do environmental testing and inspections and such. So we Gary. Gary's the president. He was of GC and Industrial. And because, you know, he did the last show with us with his vice president, Robert Risen. But Robert, we got Robert here on this show with us again. Now, he's in charge of operations. So, in other words, the guy that gets in trouble. And I'm Troy Galloway, owner of Galloway Building Services. Really appreciate you guys. My business, a little bit about us. We do commercial inspections. We do some residential inspections. We do a lot of commercial. We do expert witnessing litigation work, which falls right into this, what we're talking about here today. And we do a lot of construction consulting. So that's a little bit about us. I'll give you my phone number at the end, but I really want to get right to this show because this is a great, and this is going to be so educational. Folks, if there is anything that you listen to about commercial, this show is going to be it. Why? Because this is the one that's going to help you from being sued, from not following through or negligence or not understanding, or could even be life and death. But with that being said, let's jump right in here. I didn't mean to throw that in. Robert, welcome to our show. Tell us a little bit about GC Industrial and how you come to be and how in your operations and a little bit about yourself and your past history.
All right. Well, I'll start with the company history. Okay. Gary started this company in 2018, 2019?
2017.
Oh, well, see, there you go. I already got that wrong. I don't even know. But since then, we've expanded and we've flourished and we're doing really well, which is all we could ask for. I mean, we've developed some real good, you know, commercial industrial clients that utilize us on the regular, which is the ideal situation for us, of course. That's what we're looking for.
Repeat business, right?
Absolutely. Repeat business is a hard thing to do sometimes.
It says a lot about the company.
Yes. And I tell everybody, I said, you know, if we do good work, the money is going to find us eventually. Mm-hmm. It happens. It may not seem like it at first, but if you do good work and you're accountable and you're responsible and do what you say you're going to do, you're going to make money.
Well, tell them what you do.
I am. We do. So our company's labeled as an industrial cleaning contractor. And everybody says, well, what does that mean? That doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm going to say that probably 70% of our company is probably some type of indoor air quality stuff, whether it's, HVAC cleaning, air handlers, duct work, things like that. Or it might be mold, microbial and fungus remediation, taking care of buildings that are sick or they got mold or homes that have got mold growth or flooded buildings and things like that. And then the other, you know, 30-35% of our business would be kind of what I call industrial cleaning, which could be anything from silo and tank cleaning, you know, grain silos. It could be tanks full of sugar, flour, silos. We do things like that. We come into complete buildings and factories and take care of what we call overhead or the high cleaning, where we clean everything in the overhead space. You know, the structure, the rafters, the piping, the racks, the machinery. We can actually take some of their liability away and some of their contaminants away by doing that. And then after that, sometimes things get really nasty. We start doing commercial ovens. We've done ovens for like baking and for food processing plants. We've done ovens for can companies that actually use them. It's called a cure oven. They use it to dip 10 cans in and it goes through the oven to cure it. And so some of these are really nasty jobs. They're greasy. They're gross. We have to get inside and, you know, scrape them out. And that's more of our industrial cleaning side of things.
Confined space
cleaning. We do quite a bit of that. So
defined confined space cleaning. What does that actually really mean? I know what the words mean, but I don't know that I can see it in any application.
When we're looking at a confined space, say we start getting into a large oven. Let's say it's 200 feet long. It's massive. It's you know, 16 foot tall, 12 feet wide, 150, 200 feet long. There may only be 10 doors total to get into the oven space to do our job. So OSHA looks at that and says, okay, so if things go bad or go wrong or your guy gets sick or dies in there, how do we get him out as fast as possible? So if we don't have, say, the oven needed 20 doors, 10 doors on each side to make it not called a confined space, So it varies. Every company has a different version of confined space. Boeing Aerospace, confined space to them is an air handler that has four doors. I can open both sides. I can see 10 foot across and walk right out. But guess what? They call it a confined space, so we have to treat it as such because that's the way they want it. For the food processing plants, the ovens are confined space because they're small. They have limited entry and access, even though you look at it and go, man, it's got 10 doors. That's no big deal. But it's a big deal when you're 20 feet away from one of those doors and your guy is sick or he's injured or he's hung up on something. And so the reality is different sites have different qualifications on what confined space is versus what OSHA. You know, OSHA sets some basic guidelines, but a lot of these factories and industrial plants have, you know, through their insurance risk assessments and health and safety, they've defined their own version of confined spaces too. So
minimize liability.
They are looking at how do we minimize liability. And so there's been a big change since about 2019 or 2020. And even pre-COVID, there's been a big change in how confined spaces are handled. A lot of these companies used to do it themselves. They would clean the silos themselves. They would clean the tanks themselves. They would do the ovens. I don't know what happened since 2020, but it looks to me like it's been an insurance shift where the insurance companies that underwrite these companies have told them, hey, we don't want your employees getting in the confined space to do that. We don't care if you hire a subcontractor as long as that's what they specialize in and have the insurance and training, but we don't want you guys doing that. So I've noticed there's been a really large shift in what's considered confined space and how they go about it. A lot of companies won't do it anymore. They will not let their people have access and perform the work in those spaces anymore.
Honestly, I think it's a good idea not to. I mean, They're not trained.
Yes.
The liability for the companies has got to be astronomical if anybody gets hurt for an untrained. And this is a hazardous skill that you're talking about.
Sometimes,
and,
yes.
And just the air quality,
yes.
You know, which I want to talk about a little bit about that. Just the air quality would, you know, if you don't know, I mean, you get into it.
You
could be sick and
you got to monitor and test
and drag it home with you for your children.
Yeah. You have to know first, right? A lot of facilities, people will play dumb with you when they know something's hazardous or not right. You may not get the full answers. I ask a lot of questions. I'm a guy that I operate on details. I'd like to know everything. What do you store in it? What used to be in it? Who used to clean it? When was it cleaned last? What's in it now? Do you have a SDS, the safety data sheet for what's in there now, or some kind of spec sheet? I want to know a list of chemicals. And even if we do all that, we still take an air monitor with us, right? We need to test the confined space to make sure that the air has enough oxygen in it for us to function inside of it, or if there's any chemical residues or off-gassing and things.
So tell me, we all understand, especially after the COVID, that air quality is important. And
it seems to move to the forefront now, a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. But in my world of green energy, it's been way, you know, since the 70s and 80s, and when we started studying this, we've been really big into the air quality. And we made tons of mistakes.
Tons of bad installs and bad decisions.
Yeah, as we were learning.
Engineering.
But now that we're getting closer and closer, but now
things
commercial, a lot of people think, okay, residential, that makes sense, but commercial, they don't. But it seems to me, you tell us why, I seem to me commercial is even more important or just as much important because my family is the most important thing in the world.
Of course.
But also is the 1,000 people that work in my company. You know, would be just as important. And I got 1,000 lawsuits possible. You know, but tell me, tell me about air quality and what are we looking for? What are you looking for when people go into a building for? And why is it so important in commercial applications?
So we don't do we kind of do some limited indoor air quality surveys. We're probably not going to do any testing or sampling. We would rely on a third party or an industrial hygienist to do that for us, right? That way, we don't take liability for it because, you know, I'm a salesman, right? Of course, I come in and I see your problem. I know your problem. I'm pretty sure that's mold growth, but I generally try to get it tested. So then you have a chain of command and a chain of record that says, hey, this guy took the sample, not the sales guy. He took it to the lab. They said this is what it is, and this is what we're going to do about it. So, but we do indoor air quality surveys when it comes to looking at duct systems. A lot of the times we're inspecting the air handlers. We're trying to look at the cooling coils, the reheat coils. We're trying to look at the duct work. We want to see the conditions, what kind of debris is in them. And I start asking questions. A lot of the stuff, when I talk about energy stuff, it's going to be related to HVAC systems, only because our clients are a lot of healthcare hospitals. Tremendous, tremendous energy bills at a hospital. When you look at somebody that spends 60 or 70% of all their money made monthly on heating and ventilation, that's a big deal. Hospitals spend a tremendous amount of money on heating and ventilation.
Yeah,
tremendous.
I would think so, especially whenever you got all the, I hate to say it this way, but all them sick people. And not just sick, they've got all kinds of anomaly type sicks.
They do, and certain sections of the hospital are never off. The air handling systems are never allowed to be off because they are providing negative pressure or positive pressure to sick rooms, sick areas. They're cleaning the air for certain areas. So now you have systems that run 24/7, maybe at 100% 24/7. They have a massive use of energy. So when we're looking at stuff like that, the energy savings comes from keeping the coil sets clean. What's leaking? Is the ductwork leaking in the space, out of the space? And a lot of it comes down to the coils, though, from at least our standpoint. We're not looking at the building envelope and how the building's put together. I care if the ducts are leaking in certain instances, but a lot of it comes down to the actual air handler, the actual coil sets, heating, cooling coils.
Now, we talked about this a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Wasn't on the show here, but we talked about up there at Quincy at the Soldiers and Sailors Home with the Legionnaires' disease, where several people were killed, and that actually lasted for,
it takes them a while to figure it out. Yes.
Yeah, it took that long before they could even figure that out. So I could see where that's important. I mean, people are dying.
Legionnaires are dangerous. Yeah, super dangerous. Super.
And they did air testing, but apparently, it didn't come up. I see where the robot, where we talked about in the last show, would give me some visualization of seeing exactly what I'm looking at. So put all my sciences together.
Yeah, that's what it takes.
And that's just a piece of the inspection. So the robot's one piece, opening up the air handlers, making sure they're cleaned properly, even cleaning coils properly.
Coil cleaning's my pet peeve. That's one of my things. That's if we want to get deep into coil cleaning, I'm the guy.
Tell us just a little bit about it. I'm interested in the deep teaching of it.
Yeah.
I'd like to learn more about, to share with the people, because I want them to know how important this is when they're buying a building, just how important it is that they understand what they're buying.
Absolutely.
I'd like to start out. So dirty coils, that's where a majority of your problems actually start inside of a system. So an HVAC system.
Whether you know it or not.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at, a lot of people will call and say, I've got debris coming out of the duct system. Everything's got to be disgusting or dirty. And so sometimes we look. I'll look and the supply air ductwork is not very dirty. It doesn't equate to the chunks that I see on the desks. And maybe there's no fiberglass liner that's falling apart. So I start backtracking and we get to the cooling coil. The cooling coil has large, chunky black dirt getting sucked out the discharge side, and it's covering the fan or covering the discharge compartment on its way down the supply duct. That's where it's coming from. It's coming from the cooling coil a lot. So how does the cooling coil get dirty? Well, usually bad filtration, because you're usually mixing outside air with return air, goes through a filter rack, which is always leaking, almost never proper, unless you're at a hospital or somewhere where it's, in place and certified to not leak and it's done right. And then it goes, whatever dirt goes through, and sometimes you're just using crappy filters, right? You're just not using anything decent. You're not using a MERV 13, 14 plus. You're using, something that's, MERV 7 or 8, a mechanical, a cheapy little 2-inch pleated. Any dirt that goes through that generally goes to the heat coil in a large air handler. We're speaking of large units.
Right, right. We're talking commercial buildings.
And your little rooftop units, your package rooftops that they crane onto the roof, it's the same thing.
Right.
Any dirt that goes through the return air, supply air, where it mixes, anything that goes through the filters eventually goes to the heat coil and the cooling coil. Heat coil is generally thin, wide spacing. Dirt goes right through it normally. Your next filter is, unfortunately, your cooling coil, because a lot of them are thick. They can be extremely thick. The fins, you can't see straight through them anymore. With high-efficiency coils, they're staggered. They're staggered into little boxy compartments, and they can be a foot thick, 20 inches thick, 24 inches thick. That's your next filter. So any dirt that goes through the heat coil goes to the cooling coil. Generally, it's trapped for a while, right? It's not a straight-through deal. And so it's trapped. It's wet. Given time of the year, what part of the country you live in, high humidity in the summer. So it's wet. The coil's doing its job, air conditioning the building. You have condensation on the coil, of course. It's wet and has a fantastic spot for whatever it's going to grow, bacteria, microbial growth. You won't know unless you test it. But the key is it's wet, and it usually doesn't come off the coil. It stays on the coil. Sometimes it'll drain out with the condensate, and you'll open up the air handler and see the condensate pans full of debris. That tells me the coil's in bad shape. You start seeing that, the coil's really dirty. Or what I see sometimes is the lower, 2 inches to 6 inches of the cooling coil is just packed solid.
I've seen that countless times.
So when you see that, that coil is extremely dirty. That's not something that probably happened in a year. That is several years of either not being cleaned properly or never being cleaned. Once you see that point, I can guarantee you, you've got problems with static pressure. You're short on static pressure being delivered to the space. You're short on cubic feet per minute being delivered to the space. You're also short on humidity control guaranteed at the coil. You've lost the humidity control of what it's supposed to do for summertime. And you may have carryover moisture being blown downstream into the duct system, which causes secondary and third damage on its way down sometimes. So when that coil gets to that point, that's an extremely dirty coil. And what makes it worse is being packed up at the bottom is just the way it functions. All the, you know, the cooling coil, it's sweating during the summer because mm-hmm. it's taking the humidity and cooling the air. And so the water is trying to trickle down through it, and its drain path is out the bottom of the coil in every unit. So when the bottom rows get packed up, the condensate, the water has nowhere to go. So the water starts getting sucked or blowing out of the coil, depending upon where the fan is. Some have a fan in front of the coil, some are behind on the air handlers. So it's what we call carryover moisture. It's pulling the moisture straight out of the coil, saturating the supply air fan that's now wet, and then it's blowing that wet air down the duct system, which causes other problems. So once you're to that point, that's very neglected. That's a coil that needs some extreme attention to get clean again.
I tell people that on residential too, you know.
Houses, we used to see that all the time.
Yeah, so I see that a lot. And you know, a lot when we do when we actually are doing a gas HVAC system inspection, mm-hmm. a lot of times that stuff which you're just inspecting gets bypassed. It doesn't necessarily get looked at.
No, it does because they're hard to get to. Mm-hmm. When you start, you know, again, I've done 500,000 houses for duct cleaning. I used to be a technician. I was doing, you know, 2 to 3 houses a day, 6 days a week. Personally, I used to do it for a living. And so the residential coils are awful because they're installed hard to get to, right? Some are inside of a sheet metal plenum that you can't get into unless to get into it takes work. Drill a hole in it, get a camera, cut a triangle window out of it so I can see into the A portion of the coil. That takes real work. And even the newer stuff that's got a door you can unbolt that comes apart, sometimes that's a nightmare. The new high-efficiency ones that got plumbing and piping in the way sometimes. Sometimes they're put into a freaking closet so you have zero room to get the coil open. I used to be able to open those doors and maybe slide the coil out, pull it out of its compartment without, you know, discharging it or breaking the line set, and then get to the incoming side of the A. Because the discharge side of the coils always looks okay.
Right,
it's the
inside
of the A where I would just find hair that we could just rake out. We could just rake out piles of hair. And I don't think people realize that that's your efficiency. That's where you're losing your air conditioning power.
Well, heck, that's what you're sucking in your baby.
I know.
Your little baby sucking in.
Whatever goes through the filter gets recycled through your furnace.
And I tell people all the time that it'd be commercial or whether hotels or motels or whatever, that if you're allergic to pets, for instance, you know, a lot of people are allergic to pets, and you don't have these cleaned on a regular basis. You don't have no idea what you're sucking in, and depending on how allergic you are. Now, luckily, I'm not.
Some people don't understand. Some people get maybe their system's cleaned. Maybe they switch it from a little cheapy 1-inch pleated to a 5 or 6 inch pleated that might be a MERV 10, MERV 14. Fantastic filtration. But then they ask, well, why is the house still dirty? Mm-hmm. I said, because that filter is not designed to clean the air in your home. That filter, I'm not a mechanical engineer, but observations my entire life of doing this, I think maybe 20 to 30% of the air in your home actually makes it through the return air system at every hour, right? It's not a complete air exchange of the whole house.
No.
It's probably 20 to 30% of it. I said, so we can clean some of the air, but that filter's job is to protect your very expensive equipment.
That's
all
protect
that filter's
the fan,
for. The motor, and the air conditioning coil. That's its job, is to protect those items and to keep them clean. To protect your $10,000 furnace. That's what that filter is for. A lot of people think that they've upgraded the filter. It's going to make the indoor air quality better in the house. Maybe not. Maybe not.
What can you do for commercial buildings to make sure they have a higher air quality for their clients that come in, like motels or hotels or
motels and hotels are chronic offenders. Since I'm a nerd and this is what I've done my whole living, I used to travel a lot. Everywhere I go, I look at the PTAC, the terminal unit, in the hotels, because I'm a nerd. This is what I do. And in hotels are chronic offenders of being low budget on maintenance, right? We don't want to spend any money. And the reality is those units should probably be probably be cleaned yearly. I see them all the time. They're just extremely dirty. And some of them have advanced what I assume is mold growth going on inside of them on the fan, the components. And then I look at the problem. The problem is you pull the filter out, it's a piece of window screen. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have a little bitty mesh, you know, like all your mini splits do. A lot of them don't have real filters in them. They've got these little window screens. Instead of something,
I did not know that.
A lot of them do. It's instead of something that's more substantial. Uh-huh. So there's not any. Those are catching basketballs, right? The window screen holes are so big. I tell people your basketballs are coming through that sucker. That's not the stuff I'm concerned about breathing. The stuff we need to be concerned about is the particulate that we can't see. The fines and the ultra fines are the ones that get in your lungs. They're hard to get out of your lungs. And new studies have even shown that some of the ultra and very fine particulates are even starting to affect people's hearts. They're affecting their hearts and their bloodstreams.
I've been reading that in the last couple of months. I've been hearing more and more of that and how important that is.
So it's hard to control that in commercial spaces, right? Some commercial buildings, like large hospitals, surgery places, they're 100% outside air. So if we come in and clean or refurbish the air handler, I'm usually pushing for them to look closely at the freaking filter rack and replace it. Have it replaced with an airtight rack with gaskets, rubber gasketing, so the filters fit airtight in them. Now you've stopped a lot of the dirt and debris that's actually contaminating your HVAC system. Again, there's no return air in these spaces. They're 100% outside air. Mm-hmm. The ones that do mix return air, filtration is extremely important. And as you know, a lot of rooftop units have just got crappy filter racks.
Yeah.
They have your standard rack that's 2x2 steel, and you slide the filter in and hope for the best when it starts up. We hope it's airtight, but they're never airtight. You want to stop that dirt from getting in. That's the easiest thing you can do.
Go ahead. So I'm going
to
ask Robert, can you talk about how facilities are having their coils improperly cleaned?
Yeah, we did touch on that. Yeah. We did. And so
what our solution is to that?
Since I've been cleaning coils since about 1990, I've been doing this my whole life, basically. And we came from doing things the wrong way to a wronger way, and then eventually, recently, the righter way. And I'm going to back up. The wrong way was garden hose. I'm now going to a commercial building. The coil's a foot thick, the cooling coil. I've sprayed on whatever cleaner the supply house told me was fantastic and, you know, super dangerous, foams up beautifully, smells awful, wear a mask, don't get it on you, etc. And then I'm standing there with a garden hose for 8 hours trying to rinse out a foot-thick coil, which is a complete waste of your time. But that's how we were all taught, mm-hmm. because nobody put any thought into it. In 1990, nobody cared about that, right? So now we move further into the late 90s, where now a lot of people are using power washers to do their coil cleaning. But unfortunately, better, but still wrong, right? It's doing a little bit better job, but it's still wrong. Now we're trying to use 2,000 PSI to blast out this coil that's so fragile, you can take your thumb for most cooling coils and just draw a pattern in it. You're folding the aluminum right over. And so you can destroy the airflow of it real fast
real
with a power washer.
Yeah.
And so we learned, okay, we'll turn the power washer down. That's still not the right way to go about it. So now instead of 2,000 PSI, we're trying 1,000. Much better. We're not bending over the fins. But what I found out is, we're actually packing on a foot-thick coil. We're trying to go clean the incoming and the outgoing sides with the power washer. We would actually pack the dirt and debris deep inside the coil set until we had this fantastic wall of blockage that nobody can get out. So that's what everybody was doing this around the entire country. This is what's been going on for 30 years. This is how things were cleaned for the people who tried to do it right.
Better, though, what are those chemicals doing to the coils?
Yeah, that's a whole other problem.
Yeah.
A lot of your coil cleaners are some of the most dangerous products anybody who cleans things will ever use. And it turns out they're awful. Sodium hydroxide, fantastic coil cleaner, right? You spray it on. If you don't die from the fumes and get it on you and have burns, it'll turn that coil into chrome before your very eyes. But the bad news is you've ruined that coil.
Oh.
When you strip, you start eating up little microscopic pieces of the metal. So the coil starts getting pits in it. When the coil gets those microscopic pits, the water doesn't drain out of it effectively. It's out of spec.
That makes sense.
The water does not have a clear path to run out of the coil.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, late 2015, we've kind of, I worked with some other guys to develop a better way. And so we started looking at the products. A really good friend of mine was having a product built just for coil cleaning. And of course, I'm Mr. Snake Oil Salesman Alert. So I'm always wanting to find a better way to do things, but it sounded too good to be true. So I start trying it out. So we now utilize a concentrated probiotic to treat and clean cooling and heating coil sets. That's neutral pH, no chemicals, zero chemical smell, and requires no PPE. And here's the beautiful part of this. We apply this to the cooling coil 5 to 7 days ahead of when we're actually going to rinse it. So we come in, shut down the air handler, we turn it into a foam, and spray it into the cooling coil. Incoming, outgoing sides, fill the whole coil up, whether it takes 5 gallons, 1 gallon, 10 gallons, whatever. Then we will turn the air handler right back on. We're going to utilize dwell time and static pressure of that fan to actually draw it or push it through that complete coil set. And what it's doing is, this product's an active enzyme. It'll continue to eat and digest anything organic for about 5 to 7 days until it starts dying off. So we treat everything about 5 to 7 days ahead of time. And then after that, we'll come in to rinse. Even the way we've rinsed has changed, just based on science has caught up with us finally. It's not just me doing this. It's me and a few other select people around the United States that I just happen to know and I'm tuned into. And we've collaborated and we found out we have to change the way we rinse things. Now our rinsings are done at lower pressures, 500-600 PSI, but we're looking for 4 to 6 gallons per minute. We want really high flow at lower pressures to flush out the internals of these cooling coils and the heat coils as well. And in some extreme cases, we're doing what we call a wet steam cleaning, which is 300 degrees at about 600-800 PSI at about 6 gallons a minute. It's wet steam, extremely hot, starts breaking down the problem. The problems in the cooling coils are algae, slimes, and biofilms. Biofilms are extremely resistant to normal coil cleaning chemicals, even sodium hydroxide.
Explain to the people what biofilms is.
Oh, that's so complex. I mean, I'm a nerd, I'm a little bit scientific to be dangerous, right?
But just because the people buying these buildings are not scientists, but they kind of need to know, what's that mean?
A lot of your biofilms are caused by organic stuff that gets trapped inside that cooling coil that stays wet too long. Mm-hmm. Another place we see biofilms that just cause havoc are closed sprinkler systems, wet sprinkler systems that never get flushed and or tested. They start growing biofilms. So,
and then think of that.
Yes.
I
and if
sure
that thing goes off
just,
in your facility,
wow, that makes
even
sense.
If it goes off on accident in your facility, it can be disgusting. Sprinkler pipe bursts are disgusting. But now, when you think about it, there's biofilms that are growing in sprinkler systems that they're coming back and telling me that they've tested for Legionnaires. They're starting to realize that your problem in your sprinkler system is not just rust and corrosion. There's actually a very real reality it could be harboring Legionnaires and some type of nasty bacteria or funguses. So your biofilms are organics that have stayed in places too long, and they're living. They're happy. They got a constant food source. They got a constant debris of dirt and organics, and they love it there. What happens is they attach permanently to things. The food processing industry has been battling biofilms forever. They've realized that they have microscopic biofilms growing on stainless steel items and machinery and conveyors. Mm-hmm. And so they've realized that we just can't rely on bleach or something we spray on. You have to mechanically agitate. You need to add something that's probably foaming and something that's designed to break down the biofilm to penetrate it, because the biofilm grows an outer shell. It's hard. And it's really resistant to water, water-based chemicals. It's also resistant to even more hardcore chemicals, acids, and sometimes the sodium hydroxides. It won't penetrate that shell and do its job.
So I'm going to stop you for just one second. So after some of these hospital coils or thick pass, you know, multi-pass coils were clean,
yes,
and they look very shiny on the outside for like hospitals, food.
And facilities said they're great.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. So they actually took a Sazon one and cut it open, and it was as green as could be inside. Even though the coil appears to be clean, the old method of cleaning wasn't good enough.
Yep, I cut open a coil. I had the privilege of cutting open a coil at Boeing Aerospace in the late 97, 98, because we'd cleaned a bunch of them. They were still complaining about problems. The mechanical contractor said, we're going to replace this one large one. And I said, can I have it? I mean, I don't even know if I want it. I don't care if you recycle it. I want to cut it in half. And so I cut it in half, and guess what I found out? That 10-inch thick coil, the outer 2 inches were clean as hell. The interior was green, like consistently plugged up green, like swimming pool algae. Unbelievable. That's biofilms. That's the coil cleaner. Never had a chance to get to that. So now science and technology has caught up. We're using a pretty exclusive product that's designed to penetrate the biofilms. It starts eating them and digesting them. It physically eats them. That's its job. So once they start eating and getting loosened up and dying off, we're able to come back and high volume flush them out of the coil set. We did some large, We did some large couple hundred ton coils at a university. We spent 20 hours of rinsing, 20 hours of two guys standing there, Power Wash style rinsing that coil set. Wow. And even after that, we determined it's still dirty. They're making a plan for us to come back and do it again. Sometimes they recover several treatments. Even after we pre-treat them and leave, I've had facilities call me 2 or 3 days later and tell me there's a horrifying amount of the drain pans full of debris that I told them they need to wet back out and keep the drain clean because it's already starting to do its job and the condensate is stripping it off. And everybody, that's exactly right. And then people say, well, why do I care? And now I'm going to tell you why you care. Because when you have a hospital that spends that much money on heating, mm-hmm. cooling, mm-hmm. electricity, and power, or you've got a large commercial building or an industrial building that you're keeping cold, trying to air condition General Motors, they spend a lot of money air conditioning that million square foot car plant, I can assure you. When that coil doesn't function as intended and it's that far out of spec, you're missing static pressure, right? Delivered mm-hmm. to the space. You're missing the cubic feet per minute of the air volume delivered to the space. You're missing temperature control and humidity control. And they say, well, who cares? I said, yeah, but so we started doing third party testing. I started bringing in an air balancer guy and I paid him out of my own pocket to do before and after readings on the coil sets. So it's not just my word for it or us guessing, right? I like to have the science because the science, if people understand it, will sell the job. If you understand what you're getting out of it, I can make a coil look shiny. That's easy, man. I want to get your performance back. So what I found out is by doing some of the stuff that we've been doing, we've had universities tell us they gained an inch of static pressure back on the discharge. That's unheard of. Yeah. They've been after their mechanical contractor to get that inch back for 10 years. No joke.
Wow.
Because they need it. They have to run the drives have to run harder.
Sure.
In some places, they've told me they've gotten 6 degrees of cooling capacity back. Temperature. That's massive.
Huge.
Yes. That can be massive for a facility where you're, you know, where you're 90,000 CFM, 80,000 CFM. I said, now think about this. If you're missing an inch of static pressure on an 80,000 CFM air handler, you're probably missing about 25 to 30,000 cubic feet per minute of air that you paid to heat, preheat, mm-hmm. possibly dry, and recool. You're missing 20 to 30,000 CFM of that delivered to your space every minute. You already paid for it. That turns out to be big savings. I've had big facilities tell us that the coil cleaning and treatings we did were free after 6 months to a year.
I can see
they
that.
They said, that's for the guys that are tuned into it, right? They have their energy departments mm-hmm. and they're really paying attention. In the beginning, I was doing third party. I was having a test and balance guy flow out coils. And everywhere we went using this probiotic, because I'm a science guy. If it's snake oil, I won't use it ever again. But if it's truly something better, everybody needs to know about it, and why aren't they using it, is mm-hmm. how I look at these things. So we started doing testing of the coil sets, and we found out everywhere we went, versus our standard, you know, hardcore alkaline chemicals, the probiotic is superior hundreds of times over because of the benefit they get after the fact. They get some airflow back. That's where the money is.
Let me ask you, and that right there should sell every single job. But let me
you would think.
You would think. But I also know
so
people.
One of our biggest obstacles is the facility guy that wants to just check a box.
That's it. That's where I was headed. Right.
Yep. Who doesn't want to go after a real budget for it? Or you know.
I can't believe how many people, when I do a commercial building inspection, I always ask for the maintenance records.
Oh, forget it.
Very few have got it together. It's rare that I ever see a maintenance records. But I ask for the maintenance records because that helps me know where we've been having the most trouble. On that note,
I find it bizarre that people that are going through a large real estate transaction, buying a 10-story building that might have a large centralized air handling system, VAVs, reheat coils, hundreds of thermostats, that you're buying, potentially looking at buying this building, and you'll look at everything, but you won't look for any current test and balance reports to mm-hmm. see if the building actually functions the way that it should. Commissioning. It's all about commissioning as far as I'm concerned.
And the reason I think that they don't do that is because they don't know to do it. Because when I'm talking to these investors, because I work with people all around the world, literally all around the world, and they don't, I have to guide them in what to look for.
Well, they're paying for your expertise.
They don't understand. So now I can take, because I didn't understand all what I'm learning here today. Honestly, I didn't.
That's great. Then.
And
great
so news. I can actually share your show with them, say, you be the judge. Now, what I see a lot, and help me out with this exactly, we know it's filthy, it's dirty, but like our ductwork, like right here.
Yeah.
And it's black. How many times we see it all dirty, filthy, you know? What kind of contaminants are we breathing?
So sometimes,
I mean, I know you can't answer that
Well, a lot of times you don't know. And sometimes it's just plain old dirt and debris. Sometimes it's
which
the fiberglass
is bad
liner pieces. Sometimes. I find a lot of times when you go into office buildings and you might see the vent covers black and the ceiling tiles around it are black. Sometimes we've inspected jobs like that and the ductwork's fairly clean. Well, how does that make any sense? So I started asking questions. I started talking to air engineers. We started talking to industrial hygiene people. And it turns out it's called the Coanda effect. It's the way the air moves around inside that building. That is not dirty because it's coming from the HVAC. It's dirty because the space is dirty. Carpet's dirty. The cubicles are dirty. The horizontal surfaces are dirty. It's recirculating the airflow, and it just happens to deposit right there because the way these diffusers are designed, this style, they're designed to push the air out linear to the outsides mm-hmm. of the room so it rolls down the walls and then spirals back up to them. So it deposits everything right there. So a lot of times it's not the HVAC system.
Well, then it's all the filth and everything we're bringing in from
it's
the outside.
It's pre-existing
too.
Dirty everything. Carpet, cubicles, people. That's exactly what it is.
And you got the pressure, you know, of especially these bigger buildings, you know. Well, even homes. You know, that's how come our insulation, well, you know this, our insulation's filthy. I get up there and people say, well, my insulation's black. Well, it's all the filth that's coming through your house.
Same with carpet. Yeah, you go in these homes that have got the filtration lines around the baseboard where it's black. Mm-hmm. That's air leaks. Your wall cavities are leaking,
right? I get a kick out of the ones that don't have return air. And then underneath their doors, there's always black.
Always. Because your carpet's the filter.
Yeah.
The air that's rushing out of that room just got filtered by your perfect shag carpet.
Now you take that and you magnify that by 10 stories and 300 rooms. You know,
I think a lot of people, when they look at buying big buildings like that, they don't check to see if it's operating properly or even close to spec. Because if it's not, the reality is big repairs are in your future. I mean, I've been involved where they've replaced these massive air handlers that were tractor trailer size on the roof because they were just underperforming. They didn't know that when they bought the building. They bought it, remodeled, occupied it, and then they realized it doesn't heat and cool worth a damn. Mm-hmm. We'll wonder why. Undersized units. And the building's out of the capacity, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people that buy buildings don't think about that kind of thing. They don't think about, is it going to be okay to do what I want to do with it? And maybe it only had 100 people in it, now I want to put 400 people in mm-hmm. it. Can the HVAC system we have now do that? Who knows? They may not even get a second opinion on that, right?
No.
They may occupy it, remodel, and just go after it. And not realizing there's another $1 million repair in the future when everybody's hot because the air conditioning doesn't work or the humidity control's terrible.
Now, when you do your work, is it underneath the environmental studies or research? When we do inspections, a lot of them got to what, the Class B environmental or whatever, Class B?
We don't do a lot of public stuff to where it's classified or using the NAICS codes and things like that. We don't do a lot of public stuff to where I just don't have to worry about a lot of that.
So how come air duct cleaning has gotten such a bad reputation? And I've had residential people over here, and they talk about, you know, the cons and such.
I guarantee it.
But we're talking commercial. How come it's got such a dirty opinion?
You know, it's
opinion?
Both. It's both residential and commercial and industrial air duct cleaning. It's all got the same black eye from people outside looking in, right? And I think a lot of it has to do, well, number one, you've got various skill levels of contractors, right? Mm-hmm. You got guys that do all houses and get a big break. Oh, this is our first commercial building. We're going to cash in and get rich. And they do it wrong. They don't know what they're looking at. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to workflow it. And so you've got inexperienced contractors on one side. The other side is contractors that just plain don't care. They're out to rip you off to begin with. You know, somewhere in the middle, there's a happy medium, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got guys that don't receive proper training. And air duct cleaning, it is all about training. I'm only as good as the guys I'm sending out. I'm not doing the work. Gary's not doing the work. If we send bad guys out there, guess what? They're going to do bad work. It's the same for carpenters, plumbers, everything in the universe. You are only as good as your guys, and your guys' training is the most important thing. It has to be on par. It has to be industry standard or better, and it's got to be at the top of the group as far as I'm concerned. Especially with air duct cleaning, a lot of guys get into that. Because it's out of sight, out of mind. My client may never know if I do a bad job, and that's the truth.
And most of them do just horrific
That's
work.
The problem. And a lot of them want to take the easy money, right? I was just recently involved with a large building over in a large house in Huntley, enormous house. They had some light mold growth. They had some light mold growth in a bunch of her air handlers, which, given their location, makes complete sense to me. They put them in the freaking attic in a closet. They're sweating like crazy in the summer. It's not insulated that great. The ductwork's not insulated that great. I can see the air handlers have got some mold growth. They had a little minor issue on some of the vent covers. But the competitors that looked at that job to give her a bid gave her numbers for just cleaning ducts. They didn't clean the air handlers or even address. I said, that's the source of the problem. The coils were full of debris and overflowing into the floor. The drain pans overflowing. That's their first problem. They have an airflow issue. Drainage and airflow, that's a problem. So now you're growing mold because of the cooling coil. In the summer when it's working its brains out, just trying to cool off the third floor of your house, and it's trying to pull the humidity out of the air, now it's sitting in 2 inches of water nonstop that never goes anywhere.
You know how many times I've actually been in one during the summertime,
yes,
and then they got their humidifier left on from the winter?
Man, that's problem number two when I see these furnaces that are hard to get to in houses. A lot of the mold problems I found have come from humidification that was running over the summer.
Now, mold, let me ask you a question, because this is something I think I know the answer, and I've always been complaining about this. After mold cleaning, or any kind of remediation type this,
yes,
do you recommend that we go ahead and get the ducts re-cleaned?
Most of the time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time,
I'm
going to say
because
yes.
I agree with that, but I'm a big pet plea. I think that's a big one.
Again, mold spores are usually airborne. That's the problem you're worried about. I'm not worried about the mold that we can see on the drywall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're generally not breathing that unless you're doing something stupid. You're mm-hmm. brushing it
you're
or disturbing it. Yes. So I'm more concerned about after extensive remediation practices. There's a lot of airborne mold spores.
Not just mold, but all
of them. Just like drywall dust and everything else that's in the air. Even if you're running air scrubbers, build proper containment, take all the best measures, there's still microscopic stuff hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge advocate for cleaning the entire HVAC system after mold remediation, not just the ducts. You need to clean the furnace fan, the coils, the fan compartment, coil compartment. You need to get everything air passes through. Vent covers too.
This is another one of my complaints. And I've been thinking it needs to be done for years. I've been talking about it. So
yeah,
when we get done building a building,
oh,
whether it's a home or it's
yes.
an office or a strip mall, don't
yes.
make. I didn't get into high rises. When we get done, we don't do any cleaning. And I look inside that ductwork, and I just was in a brand new home.
And they're
today,
a disaster.
This morning looking. And I'm not going to tell you the company, but it's
sure.
a well-known custom company.
Yes.
In the Midwest here.
Yes.
And the ductwork, you could take, if I could take, well, there I didn't even have to. I just took a picture. But a lot of times you can take your finger, wipe around, and you got,
and it's
and you're
worse.
Breathing this.
And it's worse deeper in because you've got trash and debris from when the building was built, the lunch mm-hmm. of some of the contractors.
Oh.
I used to do a lot of, prior to about 2015, I used to do a lot of custom homes. They would plan air duct cleaning in at the very final, when they were doing the final cleaning, they would do duct cleaning. These guys were smart because they knew it was a disaster. But what I found out from doing a lot of new houses is it's not just dirt and debris from the contractors and the drywall guy, the electrician. They may hang the panning for the freaking ductwork for the return air of joy system first, and the electrician comes through and drills holes through all the panning to run wiring. Now you have all the chunks of you know, wood chunks and sawdust and the wood shaving particulate that eventually keeps coming back out of the duct, and they can't figure out why. So you never know when it was put in phases, right? You just don't know.
I was going to ask you for a horror story, but here's
yes.
one that it wasn't a horror story, but it was hilarious. So we do construction consulting, troubleshooting. And so it was a big apartment, motel or apartment complex right out here in West County, St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And the company no longer, they owned the company, the apartment complex. So I can, you know, I won't say their name, but they used to own the St. Louis Globe Democrat.
Oh, wow.
And so they owned these buildings. Well, anyway, they called us up because they could not figure out how come they couldn't get any heat coming up out of their register vent. And, I don't do what you do, but
right.
so I just did the simple. I went out and took a look, and I pulled the register vent open. And the reason I couldn't is because it was just chock full of beer cans.
Yep.
All the way to the top. And then I had the same apartment complex. Them guys must have had a great time building that place.
Yeah.
They couldn't get the stove level.
Yeah.
No matter what they did, the maintenance guys could not figure out how to get the stove level.
Oh, wow.
So I went over and pulled out the stove to see what's going on. And it was full of beer cans. They'd been stashing their beer cans
behind
underneath it, and they couldn't get a level.
Geniuses, right? You're like, come on, guys.
So, yeah, we got neglect of that, you know, and then honest neglect.
Well, sometimes it's new building, like you touched on, new building defects. I've gone into a brand new house. We were doing the duct cleaning and couldn't figure out why I couldn't get good suction on the return air while we were cleaning. And then they told me the home never really air conditions right. And so after doing some investigation, I found that the home only had two return airs that were in the kind of great room in the mm-hmm. one room. So they were just up the wall side by side. Well, when I looked, they went up the wall and were wide open to the attic. Somebody cut the top plate out of them. They were open straight to the attic space. No insulation, no 2x4. And I'm like, how does this happen? Why is that wide open to the attic? The framer overlooked it or somebody cut it out. Mm-hmm. But I said, that's got to get addressed now. You need to tell your
builder.
Not
to mention it's a fire hazard.
You need to tell your builder, a smoke problem, absolutely. I said, you need to tell your builder you have a real problem. This home's never going to air condition or heat properly.
Something that used to
be. But it's a brand new place. It was only, 6 months old.
Something we've seen a lot over the years. And I think that I don't know that it's as rampant as it used to be.
Yeah.
But we used to not have portable toilets on the job sites. Accessible to the guys, and they wanted to get their job. And we have countless times of the men peeing down the ductwork, or pooping down the ductwork
because they figure it's going somewhere. It's not my problem.
Yeah,
and I've seen laborers do it years ago. We did a lot of new homes.
And some pits used to be real bad, but
I've watched the laborers.
Commercial buildings.
I watched the laborer lift the vent cover up, and he swept everything in the living room to it, pushed it in, and put the vent back on. And I was just standing there thinking, you gotta be kidding me with this. How is that an acceptable answer versus the shop vac, right?
Wow.
But you know how it is. Everybody gets lazy. It's Friday at 3 o'clock all the time. And, guys cut corners when they're hot and they're lazy and they get tired. And, then flip side is some people just don't care, which is back to when we were talking about guys that do duct cleaning and why it has such a terrible reputation is because you got a bunch that don't care, a bunch that aren't trained. You have some that are trained. And then the big problem is there's a massive price discrepancy versus the guys that do it right and the guys that are looking to rip you off. And so there is no standardized pricing. You can call 10 residential air duct cleaning companies today and you can get 10 prices that are all over the place. You'll get guys for $2,000 and you'll get a guy for $300 to do the whole house. Mm-hmm. And people they have to know what they're buying. They have to understand what they're getting for the money. And
the importance of it.
So the National Air Duct Cleaners Association.
That's where I was headed with NACA. The education. All right. That's great.
This is where your homeowner can get their education for free. NACA.com, NADCA's website, has got NADCA.com, National Air Duct Cleaners Association. You can go on there and get free information about residential duct cleaning. They have spent a lot of money on residential-facing education on how it tells you how it gets done right.
What about the commercial?
There is a little bit. There's kind of a...
Because that's a different animal altogether. They
do, and they have a free downloadable guide that's kind of the commercial client to air duct cleaning.
Okay.
They changed the title recently of it, and I don't remember, but it's something along those lines. Your facilities guy can download that, and it kind of hits on... why, where, when, and how it should get done. And these things are important. That is free information you can read on NADCA's website and decide if the air duct cleaners you're talking to make sense. It'll give you some talking points or questions to ask. And some people will say, well, I don't need to join NADCA. That's just craziness. But I've been a member of NADCA for about 20 years, mm-hmm. which is, I will give you the disclaimer that our company, we have a bunch of NADCA certified technicians. I'm on the NACA Education Committee, Leadership Development Committee, our Fall Technical Hands-On Conference Committee. I teach some of their core certifications that they certify guys, and I teach it. So I feel like it's extremely important that if you get into this industry, you need to know what you're doing, unless you just want to rip people off. Some guys only go 5 feet down into the vent opening, and we're out of here. My boss says if we go further than that, it causes problems. Isn't that insane? But that's the kind of guys that are out there. And the more I talked to guys, I realized there was a lot of them that were flat out doing things wrong.
Wow.
And the ones that come to my classes, not put on by me, but by NADCA, I'm their compensated trainer. And the more people I've talked to from all over the United States and other portions of the world, a lot of them were doing it wrong and had no clue because they didn't have the training.
Let me ask you, because this is going to go national, the show, and you don't work necessarily national, but... Because I get questions, honestly, I get questions from my videos and such from all over the...
for the right project.
We'll go anywhere in the United States
too.
For the right job.
I'll go anywhere.
It doesn't matter to me.
But
maybe Puerto Rico, too. I love Puerto Rico. But anyway.
But I get a lot of questions. Yes. People just want a question answered. They're not wanting to hire me. I'm from Canada to all over the country.
They need an opinion.
And out of the country, like up in Canada. If they contacted you... Could be a resource to kind of help guide them and direct them?
I can try to do my best. If I can't, I can put them in contact with somebody else.
Well, we'll get your phone number here. I'm going to wrap this show up here because. Is there something you want to add to this?
One of the biggest mistakes when it comes to commercial air duct cleaning is a company going with the lowest bidder instead of the most.
Don't even get me started on that.
Tell everybody why. That's because they need to know.
That's a whole other deep dive topic of mine.
You're not going with a... basically a product. You're going with a service. So normally the lowest bidder is looking at giving you the least amount of time. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to good air duct cleaning, yes. you're spending a lot of time cleaning, doing the job right. So if you have a bidder that's half the price of the others, or you know a huge fraction difference, they're offering you the least amount of time. They're saying they can do it in the least amount of time, and unless their techs have a lot more experience than the other company, then a lot of the time they're just skipping things.
So. Seems to facilities. Me it's like going to a doctor. Yes. You know, I need to get heart surgery because this is health. We're talking health purpose. Everything we're
yes.
talking here, health.
For sure.
And it's like me going to the doctor and saying, you know, I need his heart surgery, but this guy can do it for $19.95. But you're going to tell me $2,400?
Yeah,
which I wish we get heart surgery for that.
No, for real. That wouldn't cover the medication. Right?
Yeah.
That wouldn't cover the pre-medication.
No.
But I think when it comes to commercial buildings and people start looking at maybe improving the indoor air quality and we're wanting to maybe do some duct cleaning or air handlers or clean the reheats, or I think a lot of the facilities people don't understand how it gets done properly. So when they see a bid for, you know, maybe my bid's $100,000, they get two other bids, one's $20,000, one's $50,000. Mm-hmm. But I keep telling them, you need to start asking questions because those other companies may not be as knowledgeable. I've been doing this my whole life. When I see your building, I know what needs to be done there. I know how long my guys take to do things. I know how long it takes just to complete certain things. I know how long we're going to be there, and I'm pretty close to accurate because I know, because I've done it myself. I understand it really well. A lot of times it's just a salesman. We're going to send a salesman out and he's just going to look at it. And I get beat all the time by companies that come from out of state. I just lost a job to a company from New York. They were half my price on duct cleaning coming from New York. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, it
Zero.
Does, but what it makes the sense that it makes is it's not good.
No. So I always tell facilities people, even if you don't hire me or my company, ask a lot of questions mm-hmm. to see what their level of knowledge is.
You just actually taught me something here that I want to put together for my clients. I'm going to give them a list of questions. Yeah, I don't care who you use.
Yeah.
If they can't answer these questions, think twice about using them.
Yes, because you need to understand why there's a
That's
massive...
That's a great... Thank you.
Why is there a massive yeah. price difference? Why?
Yeah.
Why am I at $100,000 and you're telling me you can do the same job
because
for $30,000, right?
If I tell my customers what to say, they won't listen. But if they have the list and they ask the questions, they'll listen.
Yep.
That's just human nature.
Yep. Got to utilize your free
Well,
resources.
You're in sales, you know. Yes. If you tell them anything, it's not true. But if they say it, it's all true.
When they figure it out, now it's like the epiphany. And I'm yeah. like, this is what we talked about last month.
And you
guys.
Could have saved them hundreds of thousands of possibly or millions of dollars.
Some,
you know,
well, you know what? Some people have to learn the hard way. And some of these big companies... That's how they learn. They don't like my opinion, so let's get a mechanical engineer involved. We spent $100,000 with him. Let's get a third-party indoor air quality professional involved. We spent $30,000 with him. Oh, what he told us was probably the solution. Let's go back to the
yeah,
vendor
yeah,
again,
yeah.
right? But, yeah, you know, you see this kind of stuff.
Then you run into another problem where they have to go with the lowest vendor.
Because their accounting and procurement will not approve anything but the lowest bid, and then they get into trouble.
That's bad business practices.
But
and
happens,
companies that happen
but
to
do all that. These public bids. That's what mm-hmm. happens with all these public bids.
That you're right.
It's terrible.
We was talking about that on some other projects that we possibly are going to work together on
yes.
in the future, and we just said that, you know. Well, folks, I know we could talk about this, and we
all day.
Really need to. I'm hoping we could possibly do another show in the future because this is one that's always fascinated me. Of course, I love the robots and the bots
sure.
and the toys, and that is so cool. But tell them again about the name of your company,
sure.
your contact information, how they can reach you.
I'm going to give Gary's and call Gary for everything.
Call Gary? Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Robert Risen. My email is robert@gcindustrialservices.com. Nice and long. Apologies. 314-393-1444 is my cell. You can text me or... Give me a call if you got questions.
And Joey will put all that down at, you know, and also in it so they can actually have this contact information. And my name's Troy Galloway, as you already know, owner of Galloway Building Services. And we're putting this show together because we want to educate the folks. We want you to know what's happening out there. We know that you're going to get the best price if you're the most educated. You may pay more, but ultimately it'll be cheaper 100% of the time. 100% of the time. It's just nature, mm-hmm. you know. I can go buy a $10 tire or whatever they call them, re-wraps, you know,
oh,
or
yeah.
I could buy a $100 tire. Well, you know what? I don't think I could buy a $100 tire anymore. but you know the point.
Yeah.
A
yes.
retread versus the real thing. Yes. And my name or my phone number is 314 520-665-5255. We'd love to hear from you. If you ever have any questions for these folks and you can't reach them personally, give me a holler. I'll reach out with them. We're going to be doing a lot of work together. And thank you so much for joining us. I learned tons today. So thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Sponsored by Troy Galloway and Galloway Building Services. GallowayBuildingServices.com.